We finish Wednesday with Simon Jefferson, our legal correspondent. Simon, this has been around for so long, this issue of the laws governing adoption. Have there been really any substantive changes since, goodness, the original laws, I think, go back to the 1950s, Simon?
Yeah, morning, Catherine. And the answer to that is no, there haven't been. It's almost extraordinary that in an evolving social situation that all the other law that affects people, property relationships legislation, the Care of Children Act, Oranga Tamariki, all of those have changed and changed many times. But this thing has stuck stubbornly since 1955 without any change at all. And it's not for want of trying. I've got a list here of the various attempts that have been made. They go back to a report in 1979 called the Webb Report. They work their way through the famous Pu'au Te Atatū Daybreak Report. They include the Law Commission. They include governments of all stripes saying, gosh, this act is well out of date. We must do something about it. And yet, for some stubborn reason, nothing changes. And it's just bizarre.
What are the main issues that people keep highlighting?
The main issues really are, first of all, it's just anachronistic. It comes from an era of those old phrases of unwed mothers and unwanted children, if that's not an oxymoron. And it has no relationship to cultural issues, so it pays no recognition to Māori or Pacifica family structures. Māori customary adoption is specifically cited to be of no force and effect. Now, tell Māori families that. I mean, for their point of view, that's just clearly legal gibberish, but that's the reality. And then the final point is the whole thing's based around a legal fiction, so that if I adopt a child, that child's mother and that child's father become legal strangers, and that child becomes my child. Now, that, you know, biologically, sociologically, is just obviously nonsense.
How divergent, then, is the law from the actual contemporary practice of adoption?
Well, there's a lot of talk about open adoption, which is you have the adoption following the formalities of the act, but the child and the adopting family embrace the birth parents or the birth parent, and the child knows of her or his origins. But there's no fiat for that in the statute itself. What's actually happening is that fewer and fewer applications are being made to the courts, and there are other ways of achieving placing a child in another family setting if their family of origin setting isn't workable. You can do it by guardianship, you know, under the Care of Children Act, which is where it sits.
Home for life seems to become the preferred practice, particularly of authorities, rather than a legal adoption. Could you explain a little?
Yeah, and that's right. That's exactly right. So none of the legal relationships are disrupted by that. Children have still got their mother and their father and their biological origins and their birth origins, but they're placed in a more secure environment for whatever reason it may be required. And Home for Life is a state-supported system, and it steers away from adoption, and it's a good move.
Has the law kept pace with the change of practice, however?
No, the law has just stayed stuck in its own cement, and practice has moved from, you know, a little bit, but actually the law needs attention. And as I say, minister after minister, I give you a roll call of them, and that, you know, a historic roll call of New Zealand ministers have said, yes, it needs to happen, and a historic silence has followed.
What do you think the sticking point has been before we talk about the implications?
To be honest, Catherine, I actually don't know. I've been practising in this area, family law generally, you know, for too long now, a very long time. And I can't put my finger on just what the obstacles are. I can't understand the political reluctance. It never gets to the top of the agenda. I don't know what pressures are perceived to be out there that are against adoption reform. It may not be a big vote winner, but I can't see that it's a big vote loser either. So I struggle to see what the issues are.
What are the implications of the law being hopelessly out of touch with actual practice? What are the risks?
Well, the risks, there's been any amount of research that says that children who are brought up in a secretive closed adoption, which is the model that the Act models, suffer all sorts of dislocation, social, personal dislocation, as they get older. Increasingly, kids are not being brought up oblivious to the existence of their real family, but that's what the Act, that's the structure that the Act provides, and that is self-evidently psychologically disruptive, I'd have thought.
What would you, were you drafting a law from the perspective of a practitioner who's dealing with these cases, what would be the main changes?
I'd abolish the entire thing. It's a pre-1950s Victorian concept. We don't need it, I don't think. Now, the phones will run red hot with people telling you why you do, but I would abandon it. I'd abolish it entirely.
What are the protections that people who put their hearts and their commitment into the long-term care of a child or the Home for Life system, what are the protections, though, that they have or would want to have, as well as the protections of birth parents? What's the nub of what any law should recognise?
The rights, this sounds pathetic really, Catherine, but the rights of the child.
Yes.
The Adoption Act itself does not make the rights of the child a first and paramount consideration. For that reason alone, it's an outlier in terms of legislation affecting children. It's actually not in line with our obligations under the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. If you focus on the child, your question about what do the adults need falls away.
Well, it does and it doesn't. And I'm sure there are many, and I can think of some of them, who, let's not call it a right, let's call it a respect and an interest, again, with the rights of the child paramount and the well-being of the child paramount, and the child's own view paramount as appropriate. Where are there sometimes issues that at least need a framework for resolving?
Well, I guess a dysfunctional birth family endeavouring to disrupt a settled placement of a child. But there are provisions that can be created, constructed. There are some already in place in the Care of Children and the Oranga Tamariki legislation that would serve to provide those protections.
So as far as you're concerned, you could basically just abolish the Act and other legislation would pretty much cover the actual practice.
Yeah, and I think if you were looking at abolishing the Act, you'd start by saying, what are the objects and principles? As you know, current legislation starts with objects and principles. This 1955 legislation didn't. Let's look at what the objects and principles are, and I think then the answers will flow from that.
Simon, thank you. Simon Jefferson, family lawyer, our legal commentator today.